and welcome to the ninth episode of the Functional Nerds. We're almost at that plateau for 10. And I think that once you hit 10, you know, you've come into your own and people start to pay attention to you. Anyway, this is the Functional Nerds. We're the guys and the gals whenever we can get a gal on the show, which is not very easy because of all the new stalking laws. We like to sit around and talk about Apple computers, science fiction and fantasy stuff, and music, because with Analio, it's all about the music. And then we record what we talk about and we share it with you, our faithful listeners. I'm Patrick Hester. I am the comic relief, if you haven't figured that out yet. I'm the guy who gets the rim shot after my little one-liners. I'm a podcaster, blogger, writer, cat owner. That's me. And I'm a functional nerd. And my partner on this is John Anilio.
Hello, I'm John Anilio. I write songs about science fiction and fantasy and other stuff over at scifisongs.blogspot.com. This week, we are joined by a special guest from, he does quite a few things, but the first, I came to contact him through his review blog called A Dribble of Ink, and that is Aidan Moher. Aidan, introduce yourself.
Aidan Moher.
Yes.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for having me, guys. I am Aidan Moher from A Dribble of Ink, my literary blog, as I like to call it. But actually, since listening to your last show with Blake Charlton, I felt a little back against the wall in terms of my productivity. So in the past week, I've actually I've become a writer. I'm a med student now, like Blake, also a lawyer, and yeah, we happen to know I opened an orphanage in Cambodia in the past week. So Blake Charlton. Couldn't suck it.
I love it. I love it. Oh, that's hilarious.
Well, anyway, I think Aidan.
I think we're done. That's good. Podcast over.
It's like that episode of Seinfeld where you're supposed to, like, you know, leave after you, like, say your one good joke and,
yes,
like, back.
Yes. Thank you.
You guys are pulling me off by the big hook, the big hook from a comedy show, I guess.
So yeah. That's it. Yeah. But Aidan is actually our first international third nerd. Aidan is in Canada, so that's very exciting. We're not just a United States podcast anymore. Now we have Canada represented. So we're happy to have Aidan here. Whereabouts in Canada are you located, Aidan?
I'm on Vancouver Island in British Columbia, so on the beautiful sunny west coast. You know, it's good. 20 degrees here. Wear shorts, flip flops. Break the cliche. So,
nice.
Great. Excuse the accent.
Is that anywhere near Victoria?
Yeah, I'm an hour and a half away from Victoria, actually.
Okay, great, great. So that's like, that's not so far away from, I guess, Seattle. How far is Seattle from you guys then? Or Seattle?
It's about a three hour boat ride. Okay. About a 3.5 hour drive from Vancouver. So it's quite close. I have relatives down there. I'm down there all the time.
I'll tell you what, some of the best troll hunters I have ever known in World of Warcraft have been in Canada.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah. We like our WoW, that's for sure.
Mm. Well, awesome. Well, great. Well, let's get started on our topics for today. Aidan wrote a piece that we wanted to talk about. So, Patrick, why don't you give your little intro on that so we can get going, because I did a little research on this topic and I'm interested to talk about it.
Well, I definitely want to do that, and I want to add to it because some other news hit the web today that just amused the hell out of me. On your blog in April, this is a Dribble of Ink, which is over at aidanmoher.com/blog, correct?
Yeah, it can also be found at dribbleofink.com.
Oh, is it? And, why do I... Yeah. I don't know why I went to aidanmoher.com/blog. Anyway,
that's the main one I use, but yeah.
Gotcha.
I have a few different.
Gotcha. Well, you had a piece in April,
mm-hmm,
that was talking about Terry Goodkind.
Yes.
And how he had been signed by Tor for 3 more books in the Sword of Truth series. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that just cracked me up. And I mean, aside by being floored by this, you actually reminded me of something that I had completely forgotten about, which is the Law of Nines. And I remember when they announced to the press that this book was coming out, but when the actual book was published, it was completely off my radar. I had no idea that it was even out, or, you know, I completely forgot about it. And I had to go to Wikipedia to find out what the heck the book was about. And then I read that it's actually tied to the Sword of Truth series, only it's set in the real world. It's like a parallel universe kind of thing. And that kind of blew me away. Good kind. I liked the first few books in that series, but then he just went way off the reservation and I didn't read much more. But despite the fact that that book debuted on the New York Times bestseller list at number 10, you know, I wondered if anybody actually read that book. I don't know if you guys read that book. But absolutely nowhere in my universe did I even realize that that book was out.
I've seen it in the bookstores and it doesn't have a very, I mean, I guess it's supposed to be like a thriller and that's how they were marketing it, even though it's sort of tied to the fantasy stuff, but they gave it a very non-fantasy like cover. It looks like a very stereotypical plain thriller cover. Because I remember when it was coming out and I remember reading reviews of it in like Entertainment Weekly and that kind of thing and being sort of surprised seeing it there. But I never read any of his other stuff, so I wasn't about to launch in with this one. Have you read that one yet, Aiden?
No, I haven't. I was a big fan of Terry Goodkind back, back when, before the crazy, first six books or so.
Exactly.
I was 16. That was before I realized that a grown man kicking in the jaw of a 10-year-old girl was not really appropriate. I was a fan of his books, I still think the first six hold up, you know, as kind of schlocky fantasy. But I lost interest in the series as it went on. When The Law of Nines was announced, I kind of was feeling a little masochistic and decided that I'd probably read it. But when it came time to spending, you know, $30, $25 on it, I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. I wasn't interested. And then I started reading on Wikipedia about its connections to Sword of Truth. And my interest plummeted even further.
The main character is a Rahl and there's another one who's an Amno.
Yeah. It's like Terry Goodkind just can't write in the genre he wants to write in. He writes fantasy novels, says they're literature, writes thriller novels, but they're actually fantasy. So he just can't get it right. Poor guy.
It's terrible. I like you, I read probably the first six books. And then I was done. Richard became so preachy. And whenever I would see Goodkind's picture on the back of the book cover, he just looked so smug.
Oh, that ponytail. Ponytail, the beard. He looked like he was trying to be Richard Rahl.
I wanted to smack him.
Yeah, well, we spoke about this a couple weeks ago, I think, and we, you know, I forget why he came up, but I recall reading a lot of the negative stuff about him about a year ago, and when when this was on the show notes for this week, I looked up some stuff and I found some of the blogs that I remember all the negativity sort of coming from. And one of them was The Wurt Zone. Who's the name of the author that?
Adam.
And I read a lot of that post and there was like a lot of comments, like 25 who? Comments or something.
Who was it? Adam what?
Adam Whitehead. Yeah, he has a blog called The Wurt Zone.
You guys did it again. You both said it at the same time. I still don't know who you're talking about.
Oh, Aiden, you go for it.
Adam Whitehead from The Wurt Zone. Yeah.
Adam Whitehead, okay.
Yeah, from The Wurt Zone. And he has a blog. And he wrote about it. And there's a lot of comments that went back and forth about it. And it's basically was a lot of the sort of negativity towards towards Goodkind. And being someone who hasn't read Goodkind, I did do a little bit of research on him. Today, probably just coming across the same stuff that you did today, Patrick. And a couple of things that I did find a little interesting, like it does make me want to read his first couple books at least, because the first thing that I saw was, I think, just the Wikipedia entry on him. And apparently he's a dyslexic as well, which I thought was kind of interesting considering we had Blake on last week. And he's considerably older than I thought he was, because he's born in 48. So I guess that would put him at 62.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now. So, and what I found kind of interesting too about him was that his first books were published in like the early 90s. So he didn't write or publish his first novel until he was already in his 40s. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And in addition to that, the other stuff that I found kind of interesting about him was that It says he worked as a carpenter and a cabinet maker, and he built his own home, and he was a violin maker, and he still does that a little bit. So I find him kind of an interesting character, and I always sort of find people who have that wide of a range of interests or abilities, or if you want to call that sort of thing being a Renaissance man, I always find that kind of interesting. And, you know, just sort of being a fan of the genre, I feel like I probably should read at least one of his books to just say...
Here's what you need to do. You need to read the first five books. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, 5. So Wizard's First Rule, Stone of Tears, Blood of the Fold, Temple of the Winds, and Soul of the Fire, and then stop.
Well, that's what I'll do. So I find him kind of interesting, but I could see where a lot of the negativity comes from him when you do see those pictures of him with the ponytail and the beard and the whole deal. And it seems like he, one of the things is that he has important human themes. I saw that in quotes a couple times in a very, very so it just seems like he really thinks very highly of himself, or maybe plants a lot of importance in his work. So that's where, like, I guess a lot of the preachiness sort of comes from with him. So I could see where.
I've actually got a good quote here for you on that. He said in an interview once, first of all, I don't write fantasy. I write stories that have important human themes. They have elements of romance, history, adventure, mystery, and philosophy. Most fantasy is one-dimensional. It's either about magic or world building. I don't do either, which I can certainly agree with.
Yeah, it's such a slap. I hate when any artist, whether it's a writer or a musician, I hate when they just sort of trash the genre that has sort of like brought them up, you know, like sort of like you wouldn't have any sort of audience if like that genre didn't embrace you and throw you out there. So that's always like kind of a stupid move, I think, just to like rip your core audience apart like that.
I agree wholeheartedly. And, you know, I just want to throw out there that we don't do podcasts. We do digital entertainment.
Well, what's actually great about that is that it's, you know, Goodkind did leave the fantasy genre and went to write thrillers, but he apparently has re-embraced the audience that he so shunned with his earlier interview. So I don't know what the deal with that is, but
I guess we'll see.
Well, and you know, it just cracks me up that obviously he has sold enough books for Tor to want to bring him back and to write more in that series. Now, I haven't read anything past Naked Empire, which was the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8th book. So he had
put you off the series.
Yeah, he had Chainfire, Phantom, and Confessor, which was supposed to, I guess, you know, bring the whole thing to a conclusion. And I never read any of those. I have no idea how the series was concluded because I just got tired of it.
I read up through Chainfire and ended up spoiling the end of the series, and it jumps the shark from what I can tell, big time. So I just decided it wasn't really worth going back.
So the other thing, you know, I was just thinking that with Tor. Obviously, these books have sold enough that, you know, they're willing to shell out some money for 3 more of them. The other thing that cracked me up today that I saw online was that Tyra Banks has been tapped to write three books in a young adult fantasy series.
Yeah, it's how did she describe it? It was America's Next Top Model meets Harry Potter. So I don't know how that works. I guess she goes to a magical school for modeling or something. I read the press release over at Genre Reader, run by the wonderful Jeff C. I don't know his last name. It's kind of a shame. Jeff brings up a good point that, you know, Tyra Banks goes and writes some, you know, modeling version of Harry Potter, and you know, we'll put it out, probably sell a lot of copies, have a movie, and then Paul Kearney is struggling to get published, which is kind of a shame. Poor reflection on the industry, certainly.
Well, Diane Duane said something to me. She said that that's the same publisher that dumped another author. I'm not even going to remember her name, and I apologize for that. I'll look it up while you guys talk about something else.
Yeah, well, with the Tyra Banks thing, it's, you know, obviously just her name alone will sell quite a bit of books. And this is what I never understand about celebrity books, whether it is fiction or nonfiction. You know, generally the people that are celebrities that are writing that are not authors, like, I don't really feel like their core audience reads a lot of books in the first. So I'm that sounds so jerky to say that. Like, I realize, like, what a jerk I'm sounding like saying that. But it's, I mean, I guess they must sell enough. I guess the whole thing is that, like, you know, publishing, what sort of a hit for publishers is so much less than what a hit for, say, television ratings are or movie dollars or whatever. So even if you get a small fraction of people that would go and buy, like, a Tyra Banks book as opposed to the amount of people that watch her shows on TV, it's probably an astronomical hit for the publishing industry. So, you know, they get a ghostwriter that goes and, like, sits with Tyra Banks for, you know, a couple of weeks or a couple of months, and they bang it out and they put it out under her name, and it probably sells more than any upcoming author would, just because on her name alone. And then they make money. I mean, I guess from a business point of view, I understand it, but it is a sad sort of case when you have all these great writers that are not getting published. So
right. Well, and this was the point that Diane Duane was making. And if you don't know Diane Duane, she's been around forever. She was one of the writers on the original Star Trek television series. She helped create the Romulans. She's written a ton of books. And when I mentioned the whole Tyra Banks thing, she said that I guess it's Random House is doing it, and that's the publisher who dropped Jane Yolen. And Jane Yolen was called by Newsweek the Hans Christian Andersen of America. Mm-hmm. She has she's an American author and editor. She's put out over 300 books that include genres from folklore, fantasy, science fiction, and children's books. She won the Nebula Award. I mean, she is it looks to me like just a fantastic author with a huge amount of stuff and credits to her name. And, you know, they dropped her, but they're going to publish something by Tyra Banks. And that's just sad.
I mean, bottom line, you know, 13-year-old girl loves America's Next Top Model. Her mom's at Costco doing some grocery shopping, sees Tyra Banks' book, wants her kid to read, buys it, throws it at her. Kid may or may not read it, but it's money in the bank for the publishing companies.
Yeah.
And I actually hate that you just said that. I do. I hate that you just said that, because you just made a point that I made last week with Blake, which was give a kid what they'll actually read.
Yeah, certainly.
And I just read that the title of the book is going to be called Model Land. Dear God, save me. This is just, oh my goodness. I don't know what to say anymore. I think for the first time ever, I'm speechless.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe we can move on to our next topic then, Patrick. Why don't we introduce that?
Okay. Well, you know, we've talked about a lot of different ways to read fiction these days, from the tried and true published novel in a bookstore or library, because John prefers libraries, to the different e-readers that are coming onto the market. But one thing we haven't talked too much about on this podcast so far has been online fiction. There's a ton of online fiction out there, and lots of different ways to find it, from simple Google searches to Twitter hashtags. I use a lot of those myself, and even like user groups from some of these are left over from the old Usenet groups, and they're still out there on Google and Yahoo. Published authors, unpublished authors. It seems like everyone is posting something online these days, from sample chapters to flash fiction, short stories, even full novels. Some of them you pay for, but there are also like 100 times more that are out there for free. And I was even thinking about this a little bit earlier today, and I'll get into that in a second. But where do you guys go to get online fiction? I mean, Aiden, you do a lot of reviewing. Do you ever go out and look for online fiction, review it, push it? I mean, what do you think? What are you finding out there?
Yeah, certainly. One of the big things I like to push on A Dribble of Ink is free fiction. Whether it's, like you said, sample chapters or flash fiction, short fiction, free novels you can download. I have a whole section devoted on my blog to free fiction. I haven't done a lot of reviewing it in the past, but I recently got an e-reader. I went over to the dark side. I got an e-reader out of curiosity.
Which one?
Because a Kobo. only out in Canada right now, or maybe it just came out in the States.
It did just come out in the States, yes.
Yeah, and I like that it was lightweight and cheap. But $150
here.
$150. Yeah, yep. It doesn't do much. Lets you read stuff. But that was all I was really looking for. And I found that it's a fantastic device for short fiction.
Hmm.
So I've gone out and I've found a whole whack of free short fiction. A lot of it, you know, Hugo nominated stuff, Nebula nominated stuff, great short fiction online, and converted it to an EPUB format, or sometimes downloaded it straight into an EPUB format. And I can read it on the couch, read it in bed, read it in the car, everywhere. And it's been fantastic. And I actually just last night published my first review of a short story by Saladin Ahmed, a good friend of actually Blake Charlton's. It was called Hooves and the Hovel of Abdel Jamila. It's absolutely fantastic. So I think I found that, say, through his personal site. He had a link to where you could download it.
Mm-hmm.
One of my absolute favorite websites on the internet is called, I think it's just called Free Speculative Fiction Online. It can be found at... Sorry?
I was just going to say, there's a lot of those. There's like free online reading, free flash fiction. You know, they tend to put free in front of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Free is a good keyword. Good Google keyword. But yeah, Free Speculative Fiction Online. It's found at freesfonline.de. And it's just loaded hundreds and hundreds of stories available to download. I think that's Deutschland, Germany.
Yeah.
But I'm not entirely sure on that. So, but it's all in English. Everything's in English. The entire website's in English. It's just hosted on a German domain. But Daniel Abraham, Neil Gaiman, George Martin, anything you can think of, Jay Lake, it's all up there, all free to download. It's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. I've also been just tearing through the Tor.com short stories.
Which, you know, I signed up for Tor.com and I get those emails too, and they do send out a lot of really good stuff.
Yeah, they do. The amount of content that they provide is fantastic. I was always aware of the short fiction, but I can't read off a computer screen. I just can't do it. I can't read off my iPod Touch either, but buying this e-reader has just opened up this world of downloadable short fiction to me, which I've been very grateful.
Is the Kobo an e-ink screen?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Okay. Which everybody says is usually easier to read on than the backlit stuff.
Yeah, well, actually, funny story. I walked into Chapters, which is the Canadian version of, say, Barnes & Noble, and they had a kiosk out of Kobos, and they all had the protective film, like the plastic, over the screens. And so I went over to one and picked it up, and I was like, thought to myself, oh, that's too bad. It's just a sticker with an image, a fake image on top of it. but then I picked it up and I just pressed a button just to play around, and then the whole screen changed. And I realized it wasn't actually an image. It was the e-ink technology, which was quite astounding to me, and more or less convinced me on the spot to buy one. So
now you talked about a lot of different published authors. What about unpublished? I mean, there's tons of unpublished people out there pushing their stuff. Do you read any of that? Do you find any of that? You do that stuff yourself, don't you?
I do. On my website, aidenmoher.com, I have several pieces of short fiction and flash fiction that I've written over the years. I was in a writing class this spring, so I wrote a fair bit of short fiction that I'm really proud of. So I put it up there for anyone to read. And feedback's been good, and I appreciate that. And it's nice to try to return the favor and get out there and see what you can find.
I tell you what, in the age of Twitter, I put stuff up on my blog all the time, flash fiction, you know, whatever I'm working on, and it never fails that no one comments; they just reply to me on Twitter.
Yeah, it's certainly, absolutely, absolutely.
I think Twitter has sort of almost negated comments on blogs. When I started blogging about 2 years ago, you know, I would often get a decent bit of comment. I think people used to sort of comment as a way of sort of a social network. You know, you'd comment on each other's blogs
and get a conversation going. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like the conversation would sort of get going on the comment sections. Now it seems like that all happens through Twitter, which is a kind of a more effective means of communication. You know, it seems like you can get more people involved because like everybody's there, or most people are there. But it is a little sad that sort of commenting is such a, almost become like a lost art, unless you have like a really massive blog with a massive readership. It seems like it's very,
or you know, if you have people that want to bitch.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that'll happen quite a bit in the comments too. But yeah, I don't get a ton of comments on my blog anymore, which is fine. It doesn't really bug me too much these days. But at one point, if I put out a reel, a song that got downloaded a lot, I'd get 20 or 30 comments on it, and I don't see that anymore, which is fine.
The big thing to do, it's good to be divisive. Get people talking. Yeah, so if you can get a conversation going by, taking a stand on a subject, just posting something controversial or interesting that'll get people kind of, having a conversation rather than just commenting. I think that's important. Mark Newton, author of Knights of Villiamur, is really good at it. He gets tons of comments, but he also likes to stir the pot, so...
Yeah, I run a blog for work, and it's for a very specific industry, which is the mortgage industry, which is a very polarizing topic right now. And because essentially anybody in the mortgage industry is bad, and they destroyed our economy. And so I've got a real estate reporter who writes things for us, and I can't even describe to you the amount of comments that this guy gets, and they're all just so vehement. I mean, they're just you kind of worry about these people. I'm afraid that these are the road rage people, and that they're gonna hurt somebody at some point, because it just seems like mortgage people, rawr! And so yeah, definitely if someone wants to complain, or if they or just. You want to throw out a very hot kind of hot potato topic. That's what gets them going. I think on the blogs like mine or John's, they just don't comment because they know they can jump on Twitter and talk to us and really have a live conversation for the most part.
Yeah, I think Aiden brings up a good point, though, because I know sometimes I'll have a thought that I think might be somewhat divisive or somewhat controversial, and I know a lot of times I won't blog about that because I'm trying to generate or just help to sort of foster some sort of audience, and I'm always afraid of turning that audience away. But I think it brings up a good point that Mark Newton does that, and I think you could do it in such a way where you don't come off as a jerk. You just come off as having a pretty strong opinion, and I think that's healthy. Another guy that does that is I think his name is Larry's OF Blog of the Fallen. He does that quite a bit. He really stirs the pot too, but he seems to do it in such a way to not necessarily create a lot of enemies, or maybe it does. I don't know. You chuckled a bit at that. Maybe you have a point of view on that.
Yeah, no, I love Larry. He's he's absolutely one of my favorite bloggers. He certainly does push buttons. He gets people tackles up. Part of his effectiveness is he's very well spoken.
Yes,
well written. I don't know the nomenclature there, but he can always get his point across, and he always backs himself up.
Yes.
So instead of coming across as just, one of those road rage idiots, he comes across as intelligent, provides debate for people to latch onto. And yes. I think that's really important. And it's something I try to mimic a bit on my blog. I'm not nearly as well read as Larry is, or able to put in as much time as Larry does into my blog. But I certainly...
Yeah, he's insane because he reads lots of books in other languages and stuff too. I mean,
he's been doing a reread of the Wheel of Time books.
I love those.
A Song of Ice and Fire books. Scott Backer's books. He's been posting a review of a book every day. So where he finds the time to read one of these tomes once a day and review it, I don't know. He's certainly someone to look up to in that respect.
Now, let me ask you this, because we were speaking a bit about John Ottinger of Grasping for the Wind, who was going to be on the show but then wasn't able to be on it, and hopefully we'll get him on at some point soon. And when we were speaking about him a little bit, we were saying...
Well, John, we'll either get him on or we'll crush him.
You hear that, Ottinger? You hear that? I really admired how much you read, and I'm like, oh, Ottinger's one of those bloggers that reads like a ton of books, and because I read so insanely slow And Aiden, I'm curious, what is your, now you say you've been reading a lot of short fiction lately, but just in terms of novels, say, what's a good month for you? Like how many, how many books, like if you're having a good month in terms of knocking out books, what are you looking at?
Yeah, I'm a slow reader.
Okay.
I between, you know, busy life, home life, girlfriend, I don't have as much time to read as I'd like, but I'm also, I can read quickly, but when I'm reading for pleasure, I like to soak it all in. If I read, you know, 3 books in a month, I'm pretty happy with that.
Okay, that's a human level amount of reading.
Yeah, exactly. I, you know what? I used to be able to take down, you know, a Wheel of Time volume in, you know, 5 or 6 days, but I can't do it anymore.
I did the same. Yeah, when I first started reading those, I just knocked them out.
Yeah, I was in high school, so, you know, I was reading through class, you know. 6-7 hours a day I could read, so that helped certainly. But
I never was a fast reader, you know, so when I read things like Larry's blog and John's blog, it just boggles my mind that someone could read that quickly and then knock out a nice review too. So obviously they weren't just skimming through; they were, you know, really absorbing it fairly well at the same time.
Hey, Anilio.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have you know, I've read 6 books in the last week.
Wow. Well, color me impressed. I haven't read 6 books this year yet, I don't think, you know. So, you know, I read very slowly. I had a friend that used to read, not a big reader either, but would read the Star Wars books and would literally read 1 page a night. Like college roommates, and he was like up on a bunk, and I remember he'd read like maybe 1 or 2 pages a night, and it would take him like a whole semester to get through, you know. Like a 300-page, you know, Kevin J. Anderson Star Wars book, you know.
So, I had a friend in high school who took him a year to read the first volume of Lord of the Rings. So, don't feel too bad, John.
Yeah. Now I will admit that those 6 books I read were trade paperback graphic novels. And yeah. I am writing reviews on them. But yeah, I used to be able to knock out a book every 2 days. But I found that the more I write myself, the less I read.
Oh, sure. Certainly.
Yeah. Sure. And, you know, I mean, as you get older too, it's like, you know, you have a job, you have a family,
Are you calling
like,
me old?
No, I'm speaking from personal experience. And the other end of it too is, for me, you know, and I think for you guys too, cause you're writing, it's like, I'm putting time in writing songs, and you know, writing songs doesn't take me a whole lot of time, but recording them does, and it's a ton of work and it's a ton of time. And like I already have 2 jobs because I teach during the day, and then I teach a bunch of private students in the afternoon, and then whatever time I'm doing towards recording my songs, it doesn't give me a whole lot of time to read, you know, maybe not even every night, but maybe at night, maybe I get a half hour in if I'm lucky, maybe, you know. And that's kind of the weekends, well, I get a little more, but not much.
And when you're younger, I mean, you stay up later, you get takeout, you don't cook, and you just end up having more time to fart around and do stupid things.
Sure.
You know, I find now if I can get in, you know, 3 hours of writing versus 3 hours of reading a book, what am I going to do? I'm going to end up writing.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
So there.
Well, maybe we can move on to.
Well, I just want to throw out there. Have either of you ever messed with webfictionguide.com?
I'm not aware of it. No.
It's a site where, you know, they you essentially, as if you're an author, you can go up there, you can add your own writing to it, pointed at the website, and then people can come here, and it's like a central location. They can find all kinds of different things. They can rate it. It's almost like a social networking kind of thing, because you can get an account, you can rate things. If someone looks at your profile, they can see what you've read, what you've liked, the other things that you've looked at, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's kind of a cool, neat little site. And I have my Evermist up here. But it's just another neat little way to find some stuff. Now, this essentially leads you to the website. So like if you were looking for Evermist, you'd find it on here. And then when you click it, it actually takes you to the website. So at that point, it depends on how the author has set up their website as to whether or not you'd be able to put it on your Kobo, for example. It's just another little place to go and try to find stuff. I have a hard time sometimes finding new stuff and new people. So it's kind of cool to go and I almost look at that kind of site like an anthology or like a mixtape. There you go, John. It's a mixtape.
Yeah.
You can go there and, you might follow an author that you like to that site and then branch out from there and find some other voices that you never heard before.
Sure.
So there, I'm done.
Okay. Well, let's, maybe let's move on to what we are looking forward to that's coming out in books. Patrick.
I asked DiNardo today on Twitter over at SF Fiction. I said, is there a spot on the web where you can go and you can see what's upcoming in genre fiction other than each individual publisher's websites? And he said with quite a lot of attitude, I'm sure, yeah, Locus Online.
Oh, okay, because I was looking for something like that today to see what was coming out, and I couldn't
find
anything.
Good, so it's not just me.
No,
I couldn't find it either. And of course, he's got his little finger on the pulse of the whole genre thing, and he's telling me Locus Online is where you go to find that. So, what we're talking about here is we tend to get excited because the summer movie season is coming and we get to see trailers on apple.com and comingsoon.net, and we start picking out what flicks do we want to see in the theater versus what are we going to end up renting versus what are we going to avoid at all costs. 27 dresses. But what about upcoming novels? Is there something that's just you're dying to read and you can't wait for it? John?
Why doesn't Aiden go first? Because I don't have as much on this as probably Aiden does.
Aiden, what's coming out that you are horribly looking forward to and you just can't
horribly wait? Looking forward to. Actually, what just landed on my doorstep today is an anthology that is probably one of my most anticipated novels of the year. Again, it's short fiction. I don't know where this kick came from, but it's called Swords and Dark Magic. It's edited by Lou Anders, who runs Pure Books, Pyre Books, and Jonathan Stray. And it's an anthology that harkens back to the kind of sword and sorcery days. So it mixes authors like Michael Moorcock and Gene Wolfe with authors, contemporary authors like Joe Abercrombie, Scott Lynch, James Eng.
And what's the name of the book, you say? And who's the editor?
It's called Swords and Dark Magic, and it's edited by Lou Anders and Jonathan Strahan.
That name sounds familiar, John. Where am I getting that name from?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, Aiden, because Lou is going to be our guest next week. So he's probably going to talk a lot about that book. So yeah, that's great. No, I'm interested in that one myself.
I promise Lou didn't set me up to this. I swear he didn't set me up to this.
No, I know. I'm sure.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
Basically, anything Lou touches, I look forward to. I know everything he puts out through his imprint, I'm excited about. So him editing an anthology like this with authors that I love is just right up my alley. There's a few others. I'm a big Terry Brooks fan. It's back from my younger days. He got me into fantasy after Tolkien, and he's got a new one coming out called Bearers of the Black Staff, which I'm excited about.
Is this in the Shannara?
Yeah, it is. It's a new, I think it's a duology this time, oddly, it's set hundreds of years before his very first novel, The Sword of Shannara, but hundreds of years after his most recent novel, which was most recent Shannara novel, which was The Gypsy Moor. So kind of in that in-between period, it's an odd placement.
I think the last thing of his that I read was Jarka Rus.
Yeah. You you weren't missing much with the concluding two volumes of that trilogy. probably the following volume certainly was my least favorite book he's ever written, and the concluding volume was fine, but not worth going after.
Now I did not read the Shannara books until like 2000, 2001. Mm-hmm. And I remember it fondly because I was on a plane. I was on a Southwest flight, and I had started picking up books and reading them, and I just started devouring them. And I picked up like the Elfstones, I think, and I was reading it on the plane, and a very attractive young lady was sitting next to me, and she kind of looked at the book and she says, "Oh, what are you reading there?" And I show it to her. She's like, "Oh, that's really nice. I read that when I was like 12.
I read him when I was about 12, I you know, her and I probably would have got along pretty well.
Anything you're not looking forward to, Aiden?
Anything I'm not looking forward to? Well, that Tyra Banks book. I'm not really looking forward to that.
We're gonna get you an autographed copy.
Autographed copy. Well, hey, I could probably sell that. That would probably be worth a little bit, so that would be okay. But there's a few debut novels coming out that I'm curious about actually this year as well. There's one called The Last Page by Anthony Huso, which sounds pretty neat. It's a mix of dark fantasy and steampunk, which sounds intriguing.
Certainly. Yeah, that does. That does, definitely.
I don't really know any more than that other than it has a nice cover. And he contacted me out of the blue to offer me a copy. I read up on it and sounded great, so I look forward to reading that. And there, Tome of the Undergates by Sam Sykes. He's a big Twitter superstar. He's coming out from Pure. He's been published in the UK for a little while by Gallants, and I've heard good things. Falls into the Joe Abercrombie crowd. So,
I like the Jim Butcher books.
Yeah.
The Dresden, and I also have the other ones, the new high fantasy books.
Codex Alera, I think.
Yeah, those that he's been doing. And I tell you what, I know he's got more stuff coming out, and I'm looking forward to it, but God dang it, Jim, could you let me catch up first?
he's something else. Two books a year, pretty much.
Yeah, it's like he is channeling Ellie Modisette Jr. He just wants to pump out as many books a year as he possibly can.
What's amazing, too, is he keeps up the quality, from what I've heard. Everybody seems to rave about every Dresden book as it comes out. So.
Oh, yeah. The Dresden books are fantastic. I mean, if you know, I know that urban fantasy kind of gets a bad rap because people think of them as just kind of like fantasy, Harlequin novel kind of things. But really, I mean, his books, they're all set in Chicago, and they're fantastic. They really are. I love them.
I read the first volume about a year ago and really enjoyed it. Loved it. I actually devoured it in a couple of days. So tells you how much I enjoyed it. And then I kind of went online and found out that most people consider it to be kind of the weakest of the series. So I certainly knew I was in for something after that. But haven't gone back. I figure this summer I'll probably burn through a few of them just to catch up.
You'll be burning through a lot. I think there's like 10 now or more.
Yeah, they're up there. I think there's more than 10 at this point. But
and I think there's 4 or 5 of the other one.
Yeah, and there's a TV series based on the Dresden books. It's up on Netflix. I don't know. I think it only ran for like a season or so. But
it barely ran a season. Have you ever read any of the books, John?
I haven't. It's one of those ones that I always look at and always want to get and haven't gotten around to yet, but it's definitely on.
If you've never read the books, you will enjoy that show. That show was a lot of fun. I read the books after.
Okay.
And I enjoyed that show. And then when I read the books, I'm like, oh, so this is different. Oh, okay, so I get it. Now, after reading them, I kind of understood why so many people were pissed about that show.
Yeah, a lot of what I heard about the show was that it didn't live up to the books, but it wasn't necessarily bad. You know,
right.
just
No, it was know. It was very enjoyable. You'd like it.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. I'll have to check them both out. But in terms of what I am looking forward to, as I said, I didn't really find any good resources for finding upcoming books other than what I've just seen on the blog. What I did come across that's kind of interesting that's not out yet, speaking of the Star Wars books, is that there is, I guess it's a new series that's starting, as if there needs to be another Star Wars series started. But there's one that I guess is going to be based on the new game that is coming. I remember, I don't know when it was, maybe a year ago, maybe not quite that long, the Star
Force
Wars
Unleashed?
Old. No, not that one. I've seen those books. This, because this isn't out yet, it's the Star Wars The Old Republic game. Remember there was like that trailer that like came out and everyone went bananas over and was like, this should have been the prequels. Like this, that 3 minute trailer was better than the three, you know, prequels combined. I don't know if you recall when that came out a while back.
Are you talking about the Knights of the Old Republic, the video game?
Not the Knights. It's just called Star Wars The Old Republic. It's because the game's not out yet. The game's not out yet till for a while still. It's still, they're developing it still. They just kind of put that trailer together. I don't know. I think it might be sort of like a Star Wars World of Warcraft kind of thing from what I understand, although I could be wrong about that.
No, you're right. It's developed by the guys who did Knights of the Old Republic, BioWare. They did Mass Effect, a few other games. It's an MMO.
Is it really? Good.
Yeah.
And the trailer is essentially, it's kind of like one of those, you know, from the Tales of the Jedi comic where it takes place like 4,000 years ago. So it's just like the trailer, if you didn't see it, is just essentially like a Sith ship like crashing into, I guess it's Coruscant, I guess. And it's just all of a sudden it's just tons of Sith guys, tons of Jedis, and just lightsabers blazing and kicking ass, and like people kind of lost their crap over it. But there's a book that's by Paul S. Kemp that is sort of like, I guess, the tie-in to the game, and it's supposed to be about how Darth whoever, you know, comes into power or whatever and sets up. I get maybe it sort of act as sort of a prologue to the game. But I guess I found that trailer so interesting enough, and I did like the Tales of the Jedi comics. So this book seems kind of interesting, you know, because I think a problem with the Star Wars books is that there are so many of them, and if you don't keep up, you're kind of screwed, and it's very hard. Like, I read some of the recent Zahn stuff, because you were saying that you went back and read some of the old Zahn stuff recently. But Zahn has actually put out a couple of other Star Wars books. He did one called Outward Bound, which sort of took place with, like, Anakin and Obi-Wan. And then he put out Allegiance, which sort of took place with, like, in between Star Wars and Empire, I guess.
Yeah, so he's done a couple different things.
They were interesting. I liked them both. And what was kind of cool was that even though they sort of took place in different times, he sort of made references one and the other. So I thought it was kind of cool. So you didn't have to necessarily read a ton of books to read those two. You could have read those two as a standalone.
Well, he did a sequel to the Thrawn trilogy called The Hand of Thrawn. That was two books. And then he did Survivor's Quest, Outbound Flight, and Allegiance.
Right. Outbound Flight is the one that I read. I think I read that one. And those are interesting. But then there's all these other books about, you know, going way into the future. And I read the Thrawn books, and I read the Anderson Jedi Academy books, and I read a couple of other ones. And like, now I know it's like Han and Leia's kids, and like Luke and Mara Jade have a kid, I guess. And it's like essentially like Luke is, I guess, sort of like the wizened old Jedi master at this point. And it's like sort of the adventures of the kids. And I'd love to read those. It sounds interesting, but I don't know how many of those books are out there now. It's like,
or how do you get to them? Where do you start?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I can look up some Wikipedia article that tells me what book, but then it's like, oh, there's 15 books. Forget it. You know, like, so I'm sure I'll get to them at some point because I am a big Star Wars dude, but, you know.
So
the Old Republic thing is something I'm interested in because it looks like you could just read that one fresh. So.
Sure. Now, what's really funny about that is we've been talking a lot about Star Wars lately. I don't know if you realize that. We kind of talked about it with Kate Sherrod. We've been talking about Tales of the Jedi and the Dark Horse comics and all that kind of stuff. And so that's what got me into Barnes & Noble. And I was looking for stuff to read. And I did what you're talking about. I went to the Star Wars aisle. And I remember, you know, I have a handful of the books that came out when they started, you know, publishing 2, 3, 4 books a year. And I walked over to that aisle and I thought, oh, you know, I should pick up a couple of these and just start reading them. I had no idea where to start. And I just stood there for a second. And then that's when I walked over to the graphic novels and I picked up Knights of the Old Republic, Volume 1, and Star Wars Legacy, Volume 1. And the Old Republic one obviously is set, you know, like 4,000 years before. And the Legacy one is actually like 200 years after Luke Skywalker.
Right. I've seen those. I haven't read them, but I've seen those.
They're great. They were a huge amount of fun. They were really easy to get into. And I didn't have to figure out where to start. You know, it's just like, oh, volume one. There we go. Aiden, you've been really, really quiet. Are you not a Star Wars fan?
No, I am. I haven't delved into the extended universe at all, though. I like the movies. I'm even one of those freaks that doesn't hate the new trilogy. I don't particularly hold it in high esteem, but I don't hate it. But that's about the extent of my fandom.
We talk about books that we're looking forward to, and my question to you guys is about Kristen Bretagne. She wrote The Green Rider. She's had a couple sequels to that, and I think she's got another one. But I'm sad to say I don't see her name on the Locust list for 2010. But if she has another book coming out, that would be something that I would want to read. I really got into The Green Rider and that whole world. And I don't know if you guys have read that or not. But that was something that really, struck me as a great book.
I'm familiar with it. Yeah.
Okay. One at a time. Aiden first.
All right. I've never read her. She's one of those authors. Her books kind of caught my eye every time I went into the bookstore. I always was fond of the covers, though they're, you know, a little schlocky, but I like that. But, you know, she just kind of got lost in the mix of you know, 7,000 other books that I feel like I need to read in the next year. So,
gotcha. What about you, John?
I was going to say the same thing. I'm not really familiar with her at all. So.
I think I did pick it up because of the book cover, because it had, you know, a gal
She's on a horse.
She's wearing a tabard. It's a green tabard, you know, because that's the Green Rider's deal. And it just appealed to me, and so I picked it up and read it. And what's hilarious is that she has become like my mom's favorite author. Because I had the book on my bookshelf, my mom ended up reading it, and now, you know, she's the one that if I go to the bookstore, she's like, "Oh, look and see if Kristen Bretagne has a new book."
Well, you can tell her February 2011.
She has a new book.
Black Veil.
Ooh. So,
there you go. Ooh. Your mom will be happy.
She will be. That's awesome. Okay, February. I can wait till then. Even though I want it now. Now that cool. I know it's being written, I want it now.
Befriend her on Twitter. You know?
I don't even know.
Offer her something
lucrative. I wonder if she's on Twitter. I always try to find my favorite authors on Twitter. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. Just out of curiosity, you seem well read. Have you ever read Dennis L. McKiernan?
No, I haven't. I think a long time ago I tried to read one of his books. My mom had a few. I don't know why I didn't. Ended up reading a few pages and picking something else up, as I tend to do. But somebody on a forum somewhere was just discussing them and was a big fan, so he put them back on my radar, certainly.
I've been discussing him. I did a blog post not too long ago because I did not realize. I looked him up on Wikipedia, and I did not realize that the first book he wrote, he was trying to write a sequel to The Lord of the Rings, and they even approached the family and said, "Here's the sequel to The Lord of the Rings. Can we publish it?" And they said, "No."
Christopher Tolkien isn't exactly forthcoming with the. with the rights to those characters.
And then the publisher said, "Well, it's such a good book, you got to change it and make it your own universe so we can still publish it," and which is what he did, and he moved on from there. So anyway, anything else? I mean, as far as, you know, what are we looking forward to? Just so you know, this Locus online, it's locusmag.com, and under, I want to say, I've already forgotten where it is, but it's locusmag.com/monitor/2010/directory1. And that's where they seem to have everything for the entire year of 2010 and what's coming out and when. So that's a really cool list, and I thank DiNardo for telling me about that. Anything else you guys can think of? Ooh, Tad Williams is on here.
Yeah, there you go. That's exactly who I was going to bring up.
Shadow
two
Rise. Volumes,
two books, 1 year.
Ooh. Yeah, he's...
Are they both in the Shadow March, or are they something different? Because I just started reading Shadow March.
He was writing the final volume of that trilogy and realized it was two books. So he... Okay. Split it up into two books, and they're going to be published about 6 months apart, which is fantastic.
Awesome.
Teach a few authors a thing or two about writing quickly, I suppose.
Yeah, it looks like it's Shadow Rise, volumes 1, 2, and 3, I guess, of Shadow March.
Yeah, because Shadow March is the first book, and I guess Shadow Play is the second.
And Shadow Rise is the third.
Okay, and that's going to be split into two.
I thought the final one was going to be called Shadow Heart, which sounded like an evil Care Bear, so maybe they've changed that now. That would probably be a good decision. But
I'm looking forward to those then, too, because I'm enjoying Shadow March so far. I'm about 420, 430 pages into that, so I'm about a little more than halfway through. So
Tad is a fantastic writer. He really is. He definitely does the world building like you were talking about, and he creates the whole thing, and he's just fantastic at it.
Oh, speaking of, you're also just a real quick note, authors on Twitter, James Eng, ENGE, is on Twitter now. If you guys are not following him, you should. He wrote he's in the Lose anthology on the Sword and Sorcery anthology, and his books are The Crooked Way and you know the other name of James Eng's other book, they're both by Pyre.
Blood of Ambrose.
Yes, and that's I think it's The Crooked Way.
Yeah. And then the third one's The Wolf.
Okay.
Something.
Okay,
but The Wolf something.
But James Egg's a real nice guy. I was friends with him on Facebook too, and I just noticed he was on Twitter the other day, and I was talking to him a little bit. So I think he's just at James Eng, ENGE. So he's following, and I have not read his books yet, but he is someone that I definitely want to read. So check that out.
Awesome. So just to kind of start to wrap us up a little bit, because we have been talking for a while now. Is there anything in particular that you're reading right now, Aiden, that people need to be aware of?
Yeah, actually, I'm reading Guy Gavriel Kaye's latest book, Under Heaven, and I'm absolutely, absolutely in love with it. I've always been a big Kaye fan. I stopped reading them for a few years. They used to be slow reads for me, but I picked this one up, and I'm just burning through it. It's wonderful. It's based on the 8th century Tang Dynasty, so it touches on Chinese history and mythology. It's lovely. I had a chance to meet him last week, and it was great hearing him talk about the origins of the story.
That's interesting to me, because I always feel like we focus a lot on Western mythology.
Mm-hmm.
We do a lot of Greek, we do a lot of Roman, that kind of stuff. We don't really get into Chinese and Asian and that kind of mythology. So that's kind of cool that's something that's set in the Tang Dynasty.
Yeah, I've always appreciated Kay for touching on other cultures in our world. I mentioned near the beginning of the show, I just read a short story by a fellow named Saladin Ahmed. And it was called Hooves in the Hovel of Abdel Jamila. It's a short story. It's set in Iraq and touches on a lot of the culture and mythology there, stuff I've never experienced before. And it was absolutely entrancing for that reason. It took a part of our world, made it feel alien, but familiar at the same time. Very nice.
That's awesome. I wrote a piece once where I was trying to capture that sort of Arabian Nights, feeling, and it's the legend of Ajudila, and that's a flash fiction piece on my website. And I was trying to, capture the idea of the jinn and being in the desert and just trying to get that different kind of mythology feel. And a lot of the stuff that I write now, I'm trying to put a little bit of Irish mythology into it, because that's another one that I feel is kind of untapped.
Yeah, I actually finished writing a novel earlier this year, which touches very heavily on Irish mythology and Fae mythology.
Cool.
Yeah, it's set in Ireland and goes back and forth between our world and a Fae world. So I got to research a lot about that and kind of put twists on the myths. Well, it's something I really appreciate. So.
In my novel, the main character's house, his grandfather built it, and it's called Banba.
Mm. Right on.
So yeah, John, anything on your end?
That as far as what I'm reading or looking
for? Yeah, you're reading.
I'm still reading Shadow March, and I'm actually, you know, we're talking about the graphic novels. I took my son.
Free comic book day.
Yeah, free comic book day, which we didn't talk about last week because we had Blake on and talked a lot about the brain. But I found like my local comic shop, or fairly local, and got some free comics for my son, who's four. And, you know, I got some for myself as well. And one of the ones I got was a G.I. Joe one that was written by Larry Hama, who I guess wrote sort of G.I. Joe in its heyday.
He wrote every issue of the Marvel comic.
Yeah, of the Marvel one. And yep. I guess that stopped at issue 155.
Yeah, and I have them all.
So whoever is publishing G.I. Joe now asked Hama to come back.
That's awesome.
And right. So the free comic book day was issue 155 and a half. So it's because I guess like there's a current G.I. Joe that's being, and it's sort of a different universe. I guess they didn't really use what Hama was doing.
Wow.
And so they were like there. So I guess it's going to be an ongoing thing. I don't know if it's going to be monthly, if he's just going to do a couple issues at a time, but sort of free comic day was sort of the relaunch of that. Doing 155 and a half, and I guess issue 156 is going to be coming out in the summer at some point.
That's awesome.
That was cool, and so that kind of got me interested in the G.I. Joe stuff because I've been watching the cartoon. I've been Netflixing it, or I haven't in a while, but a couple months ago I was doing that. So I took a couple of the recent G.I. Joe trade paperbacks out of the library and read a couple of those, and good stuff. I mean, I never read any of the comics before, so I really enjoyed it, and it does make me want to pick up the Hama stuff and even sort of check out what else is going on. Pretty well written, and like, you know, obviously I know the characters from the cartoon from, you know, 20 plus years ago. But so in addition to Shadow March, I've been reading the G.I. Joe comic books. So there you go.
I tell you what, though, that the Marvel run of that was fantastic.
Yeah, I know.
I loved it. And people used to make fun of me. They're like, oh, you're getting G.I. Joe. Why would you buy G.I. Joe? That's, you know, that's that silly cartoon. No. The comic book was fantastic, and so was the Transformers comic book, to be honest.
Yeah, I always heard that was pretty good too. Yeah,
and the only time that I was upset with them was when they crossed them over, and it was just terrible. It was
terrible.
Yeah, I
think they crossed them over again recently. So, you know, but anyway.
Well, I'm reading the you know, I've got Blake Charlton's book, and I've started reading that, and then just because I can't focus a lot of times on one thing. Which you may have noticed about me by now, John. Mm-hmm. I'm also reading the Timothy Zahn Heir to the Empire. Mm-hmm. And then I read these 6 different graphic novels that I bought. Doctor Who Through Time and Space from IDW. Star Wars Legacy and Knights of the Old Republic. Both of those are from Dark Horse. Green Lantern Rebirth from DC Comics. And Green Lantern The Sinestro Corps War from DC Comics. And then I read... Batman and Robin, Batman Reborn, which has Dick Grayson and Damian Wayne as Batman and Robin. And wrote reviews on all those, and I've got them scheduled to go out on the blog. So.
Yeah, I read your review of the Green Lantern one, and it made me reserve that from the library. I like Green
Lantern. Awesome.
I never read a lot of DC. It was a good review, so you guys should check it out if you haven't yet. But I was never much of a DC guy. When I was into comics, it was Marvel. Yeah. But I did get into Green Lantern for a time when Kyle Rayner was the one, which is the one not in the fan favorite, but Ron Mars was writing it, who was quite a good writer, I thought. And I like, because Kyle Rayner was supposed to be an artist. So,
he was an artist.
And so I thought it was cool. I probably read about a year's worth of that Green Lantern. So I've always been kind of interested in the Green Lantern and reading that. You know, you kind of mentioned that in Rebirth, it's sort of like a good place to jump on if you haven't read it. So I'm looking forward to checking that out.
Now, Aiden, I don't know. I mean, you could fit everything I know about Canada in my left hand.
Yeah. Okay.
And it includes Anne Murray and Celine Dion. And
that's not a good picture of my country.
Shania Twain. But one
thing.
Can you
say Rush at least?
there you go. Rush. Come on.
Monday warrior, mean strike. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean
Brian Adams?
No, don't bring Brian Adams.
Nickelback.
One thing that I do know, because I do follow comic books a lot, it's interesting to me that there was a point, I guess, where for whatever reason, imports and exports between America and Canada were kind of strained. And for some reason, we weren't sending you comic books anymore. But there was like a huge comic book market in Canada. And I want to say this is like the 40s. Okay. And so there had to be, you know, it's like you had all these people who were reading comic books and then suddenly they didn't have comic books anymore. And so there actually was begun a Canadian comic book publishing industry, and it kind of boomed for 20 or 30 years. And you created a lot of your own characters and launched a lot of different books. And from your silence, I'm thinking that you probably have no idea what I'm talking about.
I'm not terribly familiar with it, unfortunately. I know Johnny Canuck. I think he was a comic book character created during the war. My mom was big into comic books and has this amazing collection of them. But that would have been back in the 50s and 60s. So I'm not really familiar with anything that comes before that, unfortunately.
Well, that's fine. It's just something that, you know, I had... It recently came back to mind because I read something about it on Comics Should Be Good, where they were essentially talking about, you know, the Canadian comic book boom. And that it just, you know, I don't remember exactly why we weren't exporting or you weren't importing. It may have had something to do with taxes. It may have had something to do with the war at the time. Yeah, it's just like the answer was, well, let's just start our own. And so people started drawing comic books and publishing them, and it worked really well. And I think eventually those books did start to kind of come south of the border, and people started collecting them here.
So kind of typical of Canadian media. We, you know, if the States isn't producing that, what we're looking for, we try to make it ourselves. It doesn't always turn out great, but sometimes it works out. So, certainly, I can see how that would probably influence
comic book. If I'm not mistaken, some of them looked very familiar.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Big Superman, Rooperman, I guess.
Yeah.
Big R on his chest.
something like that, yeah, because it was essentially, you know, oh, we really like Captain America. So what else can we do?
that was probably Johnny Canuck. He was a big, you know, lumberjack. He didn't really have superpowers. As far as I know, he was just big and had a big beard and fought bad guys. So, there you go. That was probably our Captain America.
Something like that. So, you know what? I think we've been talking for quite a long time now. Do you guys have anything else that we should throw out there? Or
no, I think we can wrap it up. I think I'm down with that.
Aiden, are you okay with that?
Yeah. Let's get going.
Alrighty. Well, you know, this is the time in the show where we invite you, our third nerd, because you are a third nerd now. You're part of the third nerd army.
Well, I'm happy to be so.
And, you know, it was a lot of fun. I think you did great. I know you were a little bit nervous.
Yeah, I'm down about 2 bottles of wine now. So.
You self-medicated to get rid of the nervousness.
Exactly.
But this is the time of the show that's really cool for you because you get to tell everybody, you know, where to go and find your stuff. And we call it pimping your stuff. Why don't you go ahead and pimp your stuff, all your websites, you know, all that good stuff.
All right. Well, I've got a redhead, a brunette, and a blonde. So you can make your choice there. No, I'm kidding. We've mentioned a few times I run a blog called A Dribble of Ink. It can be found, like I said, at adribbleofink.com. It can also be found at aidenmoher.com/blog. Aidenmoher.com is my personal website where you can find short fiction of mine. I do photography. I'm also a web designer, so you can see some of my stuff there. It's AIDANMOHER.com. And I'm also on Twitter, twitter.com/adribbleofink.
Very cool. John?
I got a bunch of cool things coming up. You know, first of all, twitter.com/JohnAnelio, JohnAnelio. And my blog is scifisongs.blogspot.com. One thing, by the time this goes live, my newest song should be out, which is what we've been talking about the past couple weeks, is my collaboration with Dale Chase, the nerdcore hip-hop guy. I finally finished that. The name of that song is called We Don't Need Another Trilogy. And it's kind of based on Star Wars. It's essentially, I had had the idea and I kind of pitched it to Dale, and we, you know, I did my end, like the singing parts, and Dale like did this real cool rap in the middle. But it's essentially how don't stretch things into a trilogy that don't need to be stretched into a trilogy. So it's basically riffs on Star Wars and The Matrix, and Dale goes through a bunch of cool. Dale's rap is awesome. I mean, he goes through all, he mentions like Transformers and like Species and all that. It's really, it's Dale's really cool. So that should, it's done. I just have to post it to the blog. I'm going to post it on Thursday. So by the time people hear this, that should be out. And the other thing that I'm pretty excited about, which I can actually talk about, this kind of just happened real quickly. I'm going to be going to Balticon I'm just going. It's Maryland's about 3 or 4 hours away from me in New Jersey. And I am going to be, this is going to happen last minute, and Muir Lafferty, who does quite a few things, is a great writer and podcaster and writes for Tor, and I think she's actually doing Escape Pods editing now, if I saw that the other day. But
I think Jeremy Tolbert stopped doing that.
Yeah, so anyway, she does a podcast called I Should Be Writing. And I'd mentioned to her that I was going to be at Balticon, and I noticed that she was going to be doing a live show. So I am actually going to be on that live show.
Awesome.
And I'm going to play a couple songs, and I'm real excited about that.
And then you're going to pimp this podcast on
I'm
that one.
I'm sure I might mention that. she actually asked me if I can write a song for I Should Be Writing. So I'm about halfway through writing that song now. So I'm real excited about that. So if you are planning to go to Balticon, please go to Muir's live taping of I Should Be Writing and stop by and say hello. And anybody who's going to Balticon, you know, please contact me through Twitter or whatever, because I'd love to meet everybody out there. So
we should get you a shirt, John.
Like a functional nerd shirt?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think we should. So,
and then we should get you a box of them and have you sell them.
Well, if you want to get on that, I will gladly bring a box of shirts to a Balticon to give to people. So that'd be great.
But we'll have to get men's and ladies. Otherwise, Kate Sherrod will kick our butts.
Yeah, she'll get mad. Yeah, exactly.
Anything else going on? No, that's pretty busy.
Yeah, no, I'm real excited about those two things. So so it should be good.
That's awesome. Well, of course, I've got twitter.com/ATFMB, which stands for All Things From My Brain, which is also the name of my blog, which is at www.atfmb.com. I did something cool today. I put out a post that says, I'd like to blog for you.
I saw that today.
Essentially, I'm saying, you know, I want to write a blog post for your blog, and then you write one for mine, and I think that'd be a lot of fun. And I've already gotten several people asking for that. So I thought that was kind of cool. People are all over it. They think that's a great idea. So I'm going to have some guest blogs on my blog, and then I'll be guest blogging on some other people's blogs. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Guest blog on mine, right?
If you want me to, I will.
Yeah, certainly, certainly.
We just have to talk about what do you want me to do?
Yeah, well, I'll think about it. I'll think all about right. it, and you think. We'll trade blog posts.
That would be awesome. Right and on. Then I've got the serialized fiction at atfmb.com/EVERMIST, which is Evermist. Just hit chapter 30, and I did like this massive extra special long chapter 30. And then because people like John like to have a PDF, I put PDFs up. So now chapters 1 through 10 are available as a PDF, 11 through 20 is a PDF, and 21 through 30 is a PDF. So I've got that going. And of course, we still have functionalnerds.com, but unfortunately, I'm still having work firewall issues, so I haven't been able to post much there. Don't forget, we have the Blake Charlton contest going on right now. If you are interested in getting a signed copy of Blake Charlton's Spellwright, we need you to send us a picture of you holding the book out in the wild. If you want more information about that, go to functionalnerds.com. All the rules are there, all the little information about that. So definitely, you know, sign up, send us your stuff, try to get that copy, because that's kind of cool. He promised us that he would have a nurse, right underneath it, so you could actually know what he was writing, since he is going to be a medical doctor. But pretty much I think that's it.
Yeah. Well, sounds cool. Join us next week as Lou Anders, the editorial director of Pyro, will be joining us to talk about He has two anthologies coming out, one that Aiden mentioned earlier, the Sword and Sorcery one, and he also has one on superheroes.
Which I'm very interested in.
Yeah, and so we're going to talk about that as well as some other things, and so we're excited about that episode as well. So join us next week.
Yep, join us next week. Thank you, Aiden, for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you, John.
No problem.
I didn't hear the tinkle-tinkle of your glass this time, so...
It's holding it away from the microphone, too.
Gotcha. And since we haven't mentioned it all podcast, iPad, Stargate Universe. all righty, we'll see you next week. Bye.
Hello.
Hey, you know what? If you don't want to be a part of this, quit hanging up on us. Oh my God. Torbooks retweeted me. I think I may puke.
He's gone again.